Music from Chuck Gerrard. Probably haven't heard his voice in a few years. Sometimes, hallelujah. And good morning to you. 10 minutes after the hour on a Broken Road Radio Monday morning. It's October the 22nd. And we're joined now by Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. How are things in Garden Valley this morning, Don?
Well, it's a little overcast, but it's about 70 degrees. So
that sounds pretty nice.
We've got an overcast, a little warm morning this morning.
Yeah, how are the grapes doing in that kind of weather? Because Dr. Don's growing grapes down there. He's at the early stages of, what's the word for you? Vintner? David, what's that word for someone who grows?
Vigneron.
Vigneron.
That's
V-I-G-N-E-R-O-N.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Vigneron. Sounds very French.
It is. Yeah. Usually when people say the word, they usually say right afterwards, they say,
Yeah, that's true of any complete sentence in the French language.
And I noticed that you haven't got your beret yet, but that's just a matter of time.
He would look spiffy.
No, I lean more to the Italian side as opposed to the French side. So
okay. He also go ahead.
That perhaps if you did get a beret, it would have a big peak like a 10-gallon beret.
Texas beret. Yeah,
10 that'd gallon be a beret. Texas beret.
Yeah, I'd have to have that one made special. I think.
Yeah, more significant to our purposes this morning is Don is a biochemist and a member of the board of directors at creationmoments.com, and we talk to Don every Monday morning, and it's usually on matters of creation versus evolution and science versus faith and that kind of thing. But today we're touching on global warming because it seems to me, Don, that reading this article you forwarded to us, that covering up evidence is what some scientists are intent on doing, disguising things so that we believe something that isn't necessarily true. This article talks about a finding or a report that says global warming isn't so. Explain that to us.
Well, the article every year that goes by, of course, we get new temperature data from around the globe. And what the authors of this particular article did was continue to plot those temperatures. And as of this year, for the past 16 years, the global temperatures have not changed. Now, the 16 years prior to that, the global temperatures increased by a very, 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 very significant amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's when all this global warming. That's when all the global warming talks in the books and the talk shows and the scientific literature were touting, or warning of global warming and disastrous results. But we're saying now that the cycle has reversed. Or are we saying these are just normal cycles? What's the conclusion here?
Well, they're normal cycles. The previous 16 years showed that the Earth's temperature warmed up as much as 0.75 degrees Celsius, which is about 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Those temperatures the most warming that has occurred since 1880s from the time of, reliable temperature data has been taken, has only been that 0.75 degrees centigrade. So the global warming alarmist, if you will, I think had an agenda and still do have an agenda. Perhaps we can talk about that a little bit. But
Well, let's do that because it relates to lots of other matters besides global warming, including evolution. And through our conversations week to week here, one of the things I picked up is that as evidence surfaces from valid scientific sources that refutes the popular mythology, as it looks, whether it's evolution or global warming, those reports get suppressed and not published and not even talked about in the mass media. And that's a little disturbing to me because some of these come from not just wild extremist points of view, but scientists who know what they're talking about and should be published in legitimate scientific papers.
Well, yes, they should be, and this particular article was not the news media didn't even pick it up. So, did they not see it? I kind of doubt that. But it of course, it tends to go in the wrong direction for them. that there is no global warming, and the fact that the Earth can take a bunch of abuse and still come in equilibrium and stay in equilibrium, and that nature itself, nature meaning like the temperatures of the ocean and sunspots and what's happening on the sun, has much more effect on our temperature than we, by producing, for example, CO2 in this case, could ever possibly have on our temperatures. So CO2 has risen rapidly over the past couple of decades here. And now that China and India is in the game of industrialization, of course, they're polluting, if you will, if CO2 is a pollutant, the environment, even more than what we are.
Well, so. There's been a massive change from, for example, bicycles to cars now over the past 20, 30 years in Southeast Asia and India and China. More and more automobiles, it's one of the factors that's driving gas prices up, because the competition for the product. I mean, there's so much demand. So that burning more fossil fuels, that does add to the CO2 levels?
Oh, it definitely does, because that's where most of the CO2 is coming from. But I think it was several broadcasts ago we talked about these funnels that were in the ocean. Suck CO2 from the atmosphere.
Again, natural healing process that the Earth does to balance things again, seeking equilibrium.
That's right.
Well, what does it suggest about Al Gore's book? He had that book in 1992 called Earth in Balance, and I'm going to read from the article. It was his claim that, and this is a quote from Al Gore's book, "We must make the rescue of the environment the central organizing principle for civilization." A little overstated, do you think?
Oh, very much overstated. It was overstated when he stated it. Because even back then, temperatures weren't rising that much, and everybody was, well, not everybody, but the press and some of these crazy scientists were saying, oh, the temperature's going to rise by 5 degrees, and we're going to lose all of our polar ice caps, and you see, some of them are breaking up right now, and so we better do something about it. And what was the result of all of this back in the 80s and early 90s? What was the result? What political actions were taken in order to help assure that our environment was safe?
Well, if we look at that, I guess we would find out what their agenda was. I mean, was it successfully accomplished? Is it time to nip it in the bud? What is that agenda?
Well, the agenda was let's convene all the nations together and agree that we will put a tax on CO2 emissions. You've heard of the term kind of carbon footprint. And so if you're generating more carbon than your neighbor country, then you should obviously pay more tax than your neighbors. Now, this is just another, since most of the industrial world is, far wealthier than the nations that aren't yet fully industrialized, then this is another means of distributing the wealth. So we put all of that money into the World Fund, and then the World Fund can dictate where the monies go.
So we've left out the important element that the people that are suggesting this scheme, they're the ones that benefit probably the most from their current standard of living. They're the ones that get to administer the fund, and they're going to rake off 10 or 15% for themselves.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, the people that administer, we now will have thousands and thousands of bureaucrats employed around the world by the UN or by whoever, taking all the money from countries that are producing something and giving it to other countries. And maybe the receiving countries will get, 40, 50, 60% on the dollar? And the other 40 or 30% will go into building brand new shiny buildings for these places and new limos for these people, these government bureaucrats, taking up resources that are producing nothing.
So this is about money, power, wealth. Same old story.
Michael Crichton wrote a book a number of years ago called State of Fear. And it was about the global warming craze and organizations who specialize in finding new ways to scare the heck out of people and raising money, either through through government contracts in various countries and or just simply fundraising and fundraising and donations. And at the end of it, there was one of the organizations in this fictional account that was actually putting on a fake catastrophe of some sort, blowing up something somewhere and blaming it on global warming. And then, you know, the pointing it to it and saying to the world, see, there it is. It's global warming.
So the book was fiction, but right. but told the story in fictional terms. But Bob, was there good science to support global warming? Or did we just draw conclusions too rapidly? Because science has done that in various areas throughout the past and led us down a garden path. Yeah. Is that what happened again? Was there science that really sparked this, good science?
Well, here's what you had. Let's look at what you had. You had fluctuating temperatures, which we've had since the beginning of time. So scientists are good at drawing lines through data points. And so averaging that over a number of years, then in trying to extrapolate, and here's where they got into mm-hmm. trouble, was trying to extrapolate, more years than what they had data for. And so what you wound up with was a curve that was rapidly increasing in temperatures, with a little bit of data that they had over those past 16 years where the temperatures were rising, and trying to extrapolate 50, 100 years and saying the Earth is going to be, burnt up by the time if we don't do something about it. The other problem was they didn't understand. Temperature and climate is very, very complex. And even today, they'll say, well, we don't really understand all of the elements that go into what we need to consider in order to even predict anything. So now we're at a point where we're saying, oh, gee, the temperatures aren't rising. The CO2 is rising very, very rapidly, and we don't know why.
Mm. Well, what I'm hearing from you is reinforcement of the idea that we've talked about several times here, that when it comes to pure science, that is accumulating data, making observations, and recording them, science is pretty good. But it's after that point when money and power and influence tend to invade the scientific arena that things tend to go haywire. And because we tend to trust science more than our own minds, I think, a lot of times, we're easily led down the garden path. And we generate funds for people who write books and write blogs and pass laws to solve problems that may not even exist.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you have a political agenda that says, let's distribute wealth around the world, then you're going to be looking for these sensational type of things to latch onto and then try to pass laws before the science can catch up with reality. So it's not necessarily the data. Of course, the data is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the initial, interpretation within the data that's incorrect. It's the assumptions that go behind the data and then what your interpretation of those assumptions. And when you're trying to, trying to predict things beyond which you have data points, that's when a lot of scientists get into trouble. And they get into trouble on the time thing, the deep time and the billions and billions of years, because we've extrapolated billions and billions of years when we only have a very little limited amount of data to go by.
Don't the scientists do the original work, the data accumulation and recording and organizing that information, aren't they offended when their work is misused? Do they sit back and just watch it, or are they active participants?
Some are very active participants, because you can, if you're doing something sensational, then you're more than likely to get more grant money mm-hmm. for that, so you can hire more postdocs and more researchers to work under you, and you have a bigger laboratory, and you can even get a building named after you mm-hmm. and things of this nature. So there is a lot of pressure from that point of view, from the status and the money that comes along with it. So you have to be a pure scientist and not be affected by these things takes someone with an incredible integrity and humility,
mm-hmm.
which can be a rarity in some of these circles.
This reminds me of a story that I have heard, and maybe you know something of this, but back in the 30s, science and independent laboratories developed a way to synthesize iron supplements for food. And then the marketers got involved, and all of a sudden, the country was convinced that we suffered from iron deficiency anemia. And products like Geritol came into being, now a synonym with old age. And manufacturers started fortifying all kinds of food, from milk to cereals to everything else, with iron. And then 20 years down the line, now we're in the 50s, we start to see that we have too much iron in our systems, and that it is becoming a leading cause of prostate cancer in men and needs to be held back. Now, I don't hear anybody touting iron supplements anymore. So is that a true story or some version of it, or am I exaggerating things?
No, I don't think you're exaggerating, too much. I think the initial intent was probably good, and then they found that, gee, we can make money off of this, and so that's when things started to turn sour. And taking it, whenever you take anything to extreme, you probably are going to have a problem. So it would have been okay for those people who have tested that, gee, they've got low iron content in their blood, which would be very few percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, this scenario comes home to roost, because my wife and my grandmother, at least on her side, have a condition that's called hemochromatosis, which is exactly that. There is a protein, iron-carrying protein, that latches on to too much iron. And if you have too much of that in the blood, then you have too much iron in your system. So did all of these supplements exacerbate that particular condition? And I would have to say, yes, it probably did. So actual harm is being done by, past ignorance, if you will, or past exuberance on the part of some to, in this case, market a product.
Well, now let's relate that to what we see in the media these days, and I'm thinking specifically of pharmaceutical advertising that seems to be bent on convincing us that all these various maladies, especially with aging men, are endemic. There are a pandemic in the country that we need to respond now. You got to go see your doctor and ask about this drug. How much of that is nonsense and how much of it is marketing? I'm inclined to think it's 99% marketing.
Yes, a lot of it is marketing, of course. I mean, the drug companies want to sell their drugs. They pumped millions of dollars into the development, and they want to get a return, and then plus some.
Mm-hmm.
So the more drug that they can sell, the higher their stock goes, and everything else. So definitely is a driving point for a lot of the industry these days.
Where is the responsibility for the medical people in this, though? Shouldn't they be saying no, that's not the case, or saying yes, that's the case, whatever the truth happens to be?
Well, if you can take the time to find out what the truth is. The problem is, if you're a doctor, say you're a GP somewhere, or you're a cancer specialist or whatever, you have so much literature that is being pumped out these days by reliable sources and unreliable sources, and then you've got the pharmaceutical sales rep that comes in and talks to you about this particular drug and gives you the literature from the drug company that says, here's how the drug works, and this is the greatest thing, since sliced bread. And you go in, unless the guy is extremely dedicated to reading as much literature as he possibly can, the normal doctor just doesn't have time to keep up with it all.
Yeah, and that strikes me. I haven't had a whole lot of contact with the medical industry, but they're becoming more and more frequent. As I age a little bit, but it never ceases to amaze me how they can accomplish anything with the volume of information that's out there. You see patients, or you study. There must be a need for a middleman of some kind to digest information and feed it to the doctor, so they know what they need to know to diagnose and treat patients. But the tendency seems to be write a prescription. Whatever it is, write a prescription. And that kind of scares me a little bit. Is that your sense of things out there too?
Oh, yeah, very, very much so. I mean, it's easier to write a prescription than to spend time with the patient. Mm. You are being paid to see as many patients as you possibly can. And now with, socialized medicine, and we don't like to call it that, but that's exactly what it is, you're going to have even less time with the patient, and you're going to be, turning folks around. And the old concept of a family doctor, and one who actually, the doctor that used to come to your house when you had an illness, he would actually come to your house.
Yeah, I've heard stories obviously of that happening.
Yeah, those days are long gone, but they were, even though they didn't have the technology that we have today, they were far more trained in being able to recognize certain types of conditions and diseases just by feel and by palpation, which the doctors today do not even know, how to mm-hmm. do. So,
and that concerns me, and I tend to believe that. And I used to think, well, I should have lived about 1890. Then I'm thinking, think of all the people who died of diseases and accidents back then. Maybe living now is better. Well, okay, I'd live in 1890 if only we could have the same medical facility. And now I'm thinking, no, 1890 is just fine, thanks. I'll just stick with that. Get a doctor out to the ranch, and he can tell me what's wrong and fix it and go on his way. So, well, yeah, David, tell me, how far have we gotten from global warming?
Oh, quite a ways.
Okay.
I mean, we've even gotten so far that I'm even tempted to share some of my maladies and my illnesses and all the rest of the wrestling things that I'm going through. And and it's almost like a side note. I spent probably the last 3 or 4 months wrestling with this internal GI thing that I've got going on, and I in retrospect now it's more apparent. But nurses and receptionists were convincing me or were suggesting things to keep me out of the clinic, to not have me come in, and to not have me get blood tests.
You mean telling you how to take care of yourself?
Yeah, telling me, try tapioca or try acidophilus and adding that to your system. And I remember very recently where if anybody, a medical professional, would suggest a home cure, a home remedy cure, like adding acidophilus to your system, they'd be laughed out of the clinic. They'd mm-hmm. just be saying, "What? That's ridiculous. We've got modern medicine has got much better reasons for that." And the only thing I can come to, the conclusion I can come to is that I'm on Medicare now, and they're trying to limit exposure. Because every time I get a big expensive test, they get paid about 30% for what they spent for.
Well, I have another notion, and that is maybe these nurses and nurses' assistants and doctors' assistants. We're seeing a lot of those now. They're not full MDs, but they're knowledgeable young people who try to help you. It's like, say, you don't really want to go through that. This will help you, because they probably have more interchanges with patients and prospective patients than the doctor does.
Yeah. And
they care. I get the message. They really care, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm working primarily with a nurse practitioner who is specializing in gastrointestinal conditions and diseases. I mean, she knows much more about my innards than I do. Mm. And she's got charts and diagrams and models in her little office there. And it's like her life's work, at least for the last 5 years. Mm. So, she has ordered tests, expensive tests, said she was going to, and then called me back and said, "Well, instead of that, let's do a blood test to see if the indicators are in the right direction." Mm. Well, what changed your mind? Why did you? And the only thing I can think of is that a PET scan is a pretty expensive thing to do. Mm. But you got it up there, so let's run it through. Let's crank it up. Let's see what happens. Well, so, yeah, we have gotten off the topic of global warming just a little bit.
Well, just Don, is it safe to say that one of the
things that was interesting to me in the debate about global warming is that it is that for a time, and when I ran for state representative in 2008, it seemed like it was either at its fever pitch or just on the descent. There was some people are starting to actually come out and say, wait a minute, I mean, let's take a look at the data again. Let's say, and I remember one commentator used to say that the planet has been around for so many odd thousands or hundreds of thousands or billions of years, whichever theoretical model you buy into, and is done just fine now. I said, he said, I think the human race might be in trouble. I think the planet's going to be just fine. The planet will go on, and whether or not we're on it or not, that's another question.
Well, I think that's Dr. Don's point. God has designed the system so it is self-stabilizing and self-healing. And until he's ready to change it, it's going to be here for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one of the most instructive moments came for me when sometime in the 07, 06, 08, maybe 09, the conversation turned from using the term global warming to global climate change. And just kind of like backing away from the warming aspect to just on the possibility if we had a really cold winter, that could be a result of global warming as well. And just kind of editorializing and expanding the field so that there might be a possibility for a new research grant somewhere along the line.
Heck yeah. Don, just to kind of wrap this up, is there an organization you know of or two or three scientific or political organizations that you think were responsible for this global warming agenda?
Well, this fellow, certainly in England.
Professor Philip, Jones, yeah.
Yeah, Philip Jones. He was certainly promoting the idea of, global warming. And there were folks in this country that were doing it as well. And so you kind of wonder, all right, why was he so animate? And he was one of the ones that was trying to reinterpret how peer-reviewed literature is handled. That is a mechanism by which one can exclude those scientific papers that didn't go along with your agenda.
Yeah, and maybe that's an area that deserves some real serious investigation by some independent body to report to the public.
Even after this came out, you would think that he would have been reprimanded or taking his post be removed, but it wasn't. So you kind of sit back and say, wow, why wasn't all of his research just taken away from him? Because obviously he's not a unbiased researcher.
Well, I'm looking at some of his quotes from emails and other communications that he's made, and some of these pretty nasty things he's talking. He said, quote, one says here, the fact is we can't account for the lack of warming at the moment, and it's a travesty that we can't. Now, that's not exactly a scientific approach to the problem.
To this new data that suggests, well, gee, it's the temperatures have been, level for the past 16 years. Mm-hmm. He says, well, that's not enough time to really see any changes. Well, 16 years was more than enough time for him to get on the bandwagon of global warming.
And then he says, I can't see either of these papers being in the next IPCC report. Kevin and I will keep them out somehow, even if we have to redefine what the peer review literature is. So the man is career building in some direction other than good science, it sounds to me. Anyway, always grateful for Dr. Don's visits on Monday mornings, and we ruminate a lot of things, don't we, David?
Can I ask a little follow up question?
Well, okay.
And I've kind of kept track, but not all that much, because I've been kind of a skeptic as far as the global warming thing, even from the inception. And inception. Maybe it was partly because Al Gore suggested it. Maybe that if he suggested the sun was out, I'd probably go outside and check.
Yeah.
But Phil Jones and the guys at the University of Anglia, what has been their response to these emails? How have they justified saying the things that they've said now that the things that they've said are open for public consumption? And do they say, well, it was I was in a drug-induced coma, or I didn't know what I was saying. I had too much orange juice that morning. I was just kidding. What has been their response? Do you know, Don?
I don't know, but you know, the response should have been from the university that these guys should have been fired.
Yeah,
you know, for you know, even considering this and whatever, you know, the journal article that they were, you know, talking about, or journal that they were talking about, the IPCC, you know, that commission should have said, well, you're no longer on the board, on the review, you know, peer review board. And so as far as I'm aware, nothing has happened to these folks.
Now,
because they're still at the university, and still this guy's still making comments.
Well, of course, this article is pretty recent. That could still change, I suppose. I mean, the one we're talking about.
Well, that was 3 years ago when all of this came up with regard to, oh, gee, there's some data out there that suggests that global warming isn't really happening, so we better suppress the articles.
Mm-hmm. But this article is dated October 18th, so maybe it'll get some attention here. We'll see. And it's those who would like to do it, we'll post the link to it later on, along with Dr. Don's conversation with us this morning. You can replay all those back in our audio archives. Just click on that spot on the website, brokenroadradio.com, and then click on Dr. Don Clark, and you'll have access to all of those conversations that you can download as podcast or replay right there on the website. You have a choice. So, David, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I had to get that thought in.
Well, you know, one of the thoughts that I've had is that maybe the legal profession is the avenue for getting some of these charlatans, and, you know, either take responsibility for their actions or their statements or something. You know, an example is there's a team of six scientists in Italy that are facing 4 years in prison for underestimating risks prior to a 2009 earthquake. And they've been arrested. they're being charged because they softened their predictions, and they said that the earthquake wasn't going to be as damaging as it was. Now, you know, that's taking it and setting a precedent for scientists to actually make a prediction like Phil Jones or whatever. And you know, they could be facing jail time, these guys in Italy. You know, Jones, I don't think is going to be, but perhaps a class action lawsuit by the taxpayers of the United States to get some of the money back from Celebrity.
Identify yourself as an injured party, and I guess you have to define the injury somehow. But I think maybe just public exposure would be a whole lot quicker.
Yeah, I think so too. And trying to get, you know, try. I mean, at least if the guy has tenure, to lose his tenure. I mean, you know. And taking him out of a leadership role because he's clearly not capable of doing things in an unbiased fashion.
Or at least he's chosen not to because of a more lucrative path that he's on now. So
you're talking tenure now. Now you got the lefties up in arms. Whoa. Don't be talking about tenure here.
Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board at creationmoments.com. I'd recommend you check out the website, creationmoments.com. You'll find a wealth of resources there, DVDs, and it's a blog, and it's a fascinating site, all talking about how God created the universe and everything in it, and he's still on his throne and very much in control of things. Dr. Don, thank you very much for being with us this Monday.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And we'll look forward to a conversation again next Monday with Dr. Don Clark. Music from the Birchfield Brothers.